from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim, in today for Michael Krasny. What's causing polio-like paralysis in a small group of California children? That's what neurologists at Stanford and UC San Francisco are trying to figure out after about two dozen kids, five in the Bay Area, began developing sudden weakness in their limbs. The cases started being reported in late 2012. Doctors think a virus may be triggering the illness, but confirming this has been difficult. We'll talk about why and the things we do know about the illness so far with two doctors leading the investigation. Joining us for this half-hour segment is Dr. Keith Van Herren. He's a pediatric neurologist at Lucile Packard Children's Hospital, Stanford, and he joins us from Stanford. Keith Van Herren, welcome.
Thank you.
And Dr. Emmanuel Vauban, neurologist at UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital and Multiple Sclerosis Center. She joins us on the phone from France. Welcome, Emmanuel Vauban.
Good morning.
Am I pronouncing your last name correctly there?
Yes, Vauban.
Vauban. And Keith Van Herren, I'd like to start with you and ask you if you would to tell us a little of the story of one of your patients from Berkeley, 4-year-old Sophia Jarvis.
Sure. Yeah, I met Sophia in 2012. She had come to me referred by another colleague who was concerned about a polio-like syndrome at the time of the referral. Sophia had presented maybe a month or two earlier to another hospital with some asthma-like symptoms, was treated appropriately. It was her first episode of so-called asthma. She was started on a course of, inhaler and steroids, which is par for the course. And a few days into the steroid course, she developed a pretty sudden weakness of the right arm that progressed really over a few hours to complete loss of function of her left arm. And she never regained strength from that point forward. She was hospitalized, of course. They did appropriate diagnostic studies, lumbar puncture, MRI. The lumbar puncture showed a lot of white blood cells around her spinal cord, and the MRI showed inflammation in her spinal cord, but it showed inflammation really in a specific part of her spinal cord. It is part of the spinal cord that is responsible for motor nerve sort of where the motor nerves are located. And injury to that part of the spinal cord is really a very specific injury. We don't see it to that part of the spinal cord, that isolated, that specific, very often. And that is the anterior horn cell or motor neuron cell area of the spinal cord, and that leads to this polio-like syndrome. So when you injure only that part of the spinal cord, you get a very specific syndrome of flaccid paralysis, meaning floppy, flaccid, and very poor recovery thereafter. And she's still doing wonderfully in every way, except that she can't move her left arm.
Right, and you mentioned it was sudden. I read that she was reaching for a toy and her arm stopped working mid grasp.
The onset was about that sudden. Yeah, it took several hours for it to become weaker and weaker and weaker, but the onset was that quick.
Why has it been so hard to pinpoint the cause, Keith Van Herren?
That's a great question, and we should really give credit to our colleagues at the California Department of Public Health here. They're really the ones who have been leading the investigation. They just are doing it behind the scenes. Dr. Wabant and I happen to know some of our colleagues there very well. After Dr. Wabant and I, who worked closely to begin with, had seen a couple of cases together, we contacted them and we began working together and saying, we've seen some of these cases, and they said, we have too. Let's see if there's something more to this. This is very unusual. We all agreed on that. And what we found was actually the viruses that we suspected and they suspected were much harder to isolate than viruses that, for example, Dr. Wabant and I might be used to. We're used to working with viruses like herpes virus and influenza in most cases and neurologic disease. But the viruses that the CDPH is looking for, the California Department of Public Health, are enteroviruses that are really difficult to isolate from blood and spinal fluid. In known outbreaks of similar disorders that have been affecting other parts of the world, with these kinds of viruses, their yield in terms of recovering virus from blood or spinal cord is below 5%, maybe as low, you know, somewhere in the range of 0 to 5% of all the samples that they take where they really are pretty certain that they have this disease. They're really difficult to isolate. So that makes it very hard to connect all the dots on the cases. What we're seeing is a very specific syndrome that we have not seen before. But figuring out exactly what virus is causing it has proven very, very difficult.
Yeah, I read that you think it could be enterovirus 68. Is that right?
We think that's a possibility. And this is, again, the excellent detective work on the part of the CDPH. They are the lab that actually identified some of these viruses way back in the 60s and 70s. This is very lab in California that has done it. And they were the ones that detected the virus in a couple of these kids. The thing that makes it difficult in these cases is they've detected it in the nasal swabs where these viruses can be, you know, these are not sterile parts of the body. So these viruses could be there simply by chance. What we think, though, is that these viruses, enterovirus 68, is not very common. And so detecting it there by chance could happen, but we also think that it is a likely culprit here because we know from at least one good case report that enterovirus 68 seems to be able to do just what we're seeing here.
We're discussing a mystery illness striking Bay Area kids. At least 24 California children have been affected, and doctors are still trying to find answers. Do you have questions for the doctors about this polio-like illness? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. And Dr. Vuban, one of the other difficulties that I understand you're trying to deal with is helping doctors diagnose this. Can you say a little bit about those efforts?
Yes, absolutely. And Dr. Van Haren has nicely outlined some of the challenges we've have faced over the past year and a half. Some of the additional challenges are that a lot of these cases were actually initially suspected to be just inflammation in the spinal cord that we call acute transverse myelitis. However, the clinical presentation, so when we see these patients, they have something a little funny about them in terms of not having increased reflexes, for example, but having decreased reflexes. And most of them, at least based on the case we were able to review, had abnormal findings in the spinal cord at the level of the anterior horn. But some of these findings were initially just read as typical inflammation in the spinal cord. So it's been because patients have tended to poorly recover after these events that they were referred to different clinics to rule out disease like multiple sclerosis or neuromyelitis optica, that we have started to see these patients and figure out that this was not the typical transverse myelitis we see all the time, but this was something that was affecting clearly the motor neuron and had a different origin.
So if it's being potentially misdiagnosed, there could be more than 24 cases in the last year and a half?
So it is possible that it could be a little more. However, I think that especially with the increased awareness that has gotten through the media over the past months, we have received actually a fair amount of emails from physicians but also families, and we have been able to identify potentially cases that could be related, but most of the emails that were sent to us were actually very clearly not related to what we have seen. When we talk about acute flaccid paralysis, there are actually different disorders that can result in flaccid paralysis. Some patients could have a stroke, some patients could have an infection, some patients could have Guillain-Barré. So it's very important to have really a lot of details on these cases and to be able to examine them or have a neurologist or child neurologist examine those cases. I think that also to complicate the situation is that it is possible that not all cases come with the same degree of severity. So some cases may be more severe, some may be more benign in terms of the extent of muscles that are involved. And some of these cases, if they are benign, probably will be underdiagnosed just because they don't, they have not been associated with very severe dysfunction.
And the numbers, as I understand them, is there have been 24 cases or so statewide, 11 in Northern California, 5 of those in the Bay Area. Is the potential virus, or is the potential illness that you think could be the enterovirus 68 or another virus, a polio-like virus, is it contagious? Can it be transmitted?
So the virus itself is contagious because that's how it goes from one human to the other. However, we believe that if the weakness we have seen was really associated to this virus, the vast majority of individuals encountering this virus would actually have only either a benign upper respiratory illness or more severe respiratory illness, like in the case of Dr. Von Haren, who had the patient had asthma-like attack initially. So this is a viral agent that is contagious, but obviously this agent is overall fairly rare, given on all the epidemiology data, not only in California, but in the U.S. and all over the world. And it's only in a very small proportion of individuals affected that there will be some acute flaccid paralysis. And again, we're not totally directly sure that this is the real culprit of what we have seen, but in
right.
case this was this virus, that's what we suspect is happening.
And Keith Van Haren, do you want to say, you've been reassuring the public that this is rare. Do you want to say any more about what constitutes rare?
Well, that's a good question. I think the thing to keep in mind is that they, so for children in California and other parts of the U.S., the likelihood of having anything bad happen to them related to this virus is much, much lower than any of the other many more common things to worry about, you know, getting hurt in the playground, getting hurt in a car accident, contracting serious complications of influenza. The incidence we're seeing here is still very low. We're seeing, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 cases in all of California over, it's now about a 2-year period. And that comes out to a very low number. We're talking about less than probably 1 in a million kind of thing. So I am trying to put things in perspective for families and parents who might be worried about something like this. We think that this is a very rare complication of a rare virus. And that's, there are a lot of presumptions there about we are presuming it's a virus and we're presuming this is a complication of it. But I think that is really as accurate a statement as we can make right now. And I think that's quite true. I think that it really is, there is no reason for families to do anything differently than they're doing now. But certainly the CDPH here in California and the CDC are really following this very closely. So it is their entire job to follow and manage these sorts of things, and they're paying a lot of attention.
We're talking with doctors who are still trying to find answers to a mystery illness striking Bay Area kids. Let's go to some of your calls. And Profila in Cupertino, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yes.
Please go ahead.
Yeah. So my 2-year-old had this exact same problem almost around a year and a half ago. So the time kind of matches. It was the fourth quarter of 2012 when she started showing these symptoms in her right leg, towards upper half of the right leg. And we did consult Dr. James Campbell from Lucy Lee Picard Children's Hospital. And actually, there was no proper diagnosis because nobody actually knew what was happening, and there was no swelling, there were no rashes, there were no fractures, nothing whatsoever, and she didn't even have any fevers or anything of that kind. The only thing that kind of helped me was I just did some kind of oil massage to her, and especially towards her leg and her lower part of her stomach, and that kind of helped. I'm not sure if this is a solution. Maybe that's a coincidence. I just wanted to call up and tell people and the doctors that this did happen to my daughter, and since then she's fine. I mean, it took around a month or so for the symptoms to go away. And in the follow-up appointment, she was fine. She was able to run like a normal kid. But there was a point when the situation was so bad, she couldn't even walk properly. And I'm really thankful to God. It did vanish. But to date, I still don't know what happened. And I hope, you know, doctors find a solution for this and as soon as possible.
Dr. Keith Van Haren, do you have any reaction to Prophylla and also his use of massage with herbs, you know, as being a potential treatment or helping the situation in any way?
Well, I'm very happy to hear his daughter's doing well, and it sounds like back to normal now. I'll say that weakness can happen in the setting of illness or even on its own for all sorts of reasons, including inflammation of muscle or simply pain in the joints or the bones. And isolating and figuring out whether it's actually due to the sort of polio-like illness we're talking about here is fairly difficult in many cases. It requires fairly detailed and specific studies, including a spinal tap and an MRI of the spinal cord, which are not always indicated in cases of weakness, I should say. The doctors use the history, you know, the sort of patient's story, and the examination at the time of the illness to determine whether those tests are needed. And sometimes they're just not. But I will say that it is one of the difficult things is determining what's causing it here. I think it's hard to say from the story alone there if this is it. I would say that there's, based on what I hear, it could be many other things.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
and we would need to know more whether it's related, but hard to say much more about whether the oils or anything could be helpful. We don't know of any story so far that suggests that oils or any sort of balms are helpful to patients.
Well, Keith Van Haren and Emmanuel Vigbaum, please feel free to jump in here. But what should families do if they suspect illness?
So I think what's important is first, seek medical attention. And typically, if there is an acute flaccid paralysis, one should see a child neurologist or an adult neurologist, depending who is available in your area. I think that most of the cases we have seen have occurred in children. So if they can be evaluated by a child neurologist, it's better. The importance is that quickly some evaluations are added to the clinical examination, and depending on what the doctor finds on the clinical examination, you know, an electromyogram or an MRI can be added to the evaluations. A spinal tap can be added to the evaluations. It's actually tricky for a non-neurologist to be able to diagnose this kind of syndrome because there's actually lots of mimics that can look like polio-like symptoms and are actually absolutely unrelated. And sorting out what it is really important.
Dr. Vigbaum, how quickly, though, should they see a medical professional? I mean, Keith Van Haren talked about how in Sophia's case it started like an asthma-like illness, or in other cases it started like a cold or a respiratory illness. I mean, should they be going at the sign of, when their child has a cold?
So this is, you know, a very good question, and there's no way patients should run to the emergency room with their child because they have a cold. I think that what we're saying is that children should be seen promptly if they develop acute flaccid paralysis. And that's a question of common sense. Is as a parent, you see your child developing severe weakness in one arm or one leg or two arms or legs, you should bring your child to the attention of a child neurologist promptly.
Again, at least 24 California children have been affected with a polio-like illness. Do you have questions for the doctors? Please give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. And let's go to Barbara in Hayward. Hi, Barbara.
Yes, good morning. I'm wondering if you have looked at any medications that these children have been taking before they became ill or before they became paralyzed, and any possible contamination in those products. Also, maybe aerosols in the home or other types of sprays that could be contaminated. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Keith Van Haren or Emmanuel Vaubant, would either of you like to take that?
So there are side effects associated with all medications, and there can be side effects associated with exposures in the home, and those things are a part of the public health survey that is done when the public health teams get involved. But there's nothing sort of chemical that does anything anywhere near this specific that we're aware of. And no medications have been associated with anything this specific. There are chemicals and other things that can cause general weakness due to through other means, but nothing that does this.
David writes, are there any pre-existing overlapping characteristics identified among your patients, say geography, age, gender, exposure to certain elements, allergies? Have you been able to identify any of those?
The interesting thing so far is that none of the patients have been connected physically or in contact with each other in any way so far. Come from very different communities spread across the state, which is, again, what brings us back to our understanding that we think this is a rare manifestation of a rare virus, as is the case with many other viruses that can cause this kind of syndrome. So no sort of common element that links all the stories other than to say essentially all the patients have been in contact or had themselves illness just preceding the onset or during the onset of the weakness.
And are we sure, Emmanuel Vaubant, that this is only happening in California?
Yeah, this is a very good question, because actually we have been contacted by colleagues in other states, and we're trying to understand whether other states see a similar kind of number of syndromes, of polio-like symptoms. We have so far heard of a very small number of similar symptoms, and in some cases we've been able to get a pretty clear description of what had been seen by the physicians and what was found with all the evaluations. And most of these cases so far were felt to not be related. However, I think that, you know, the main thing is to, for these physicians or families outside of California, is to work with their local Department of Public Health and local providers to try to sort out if there's really a question about that. Polio-like syndrome can be seen with a variety of infection that includes, as Dr. Van Haren was saying earlier, herpes virus infections, but also West Nile virus, Lyme. So there are tests that can be done easily to rule out agents that are known to be associated with these manifestations.
And Wendy asks on Facebook, Keith Van Haren, is it generally the arms that are paralyzed, or have other body parts been affected too?
We've seen any or all of the limbs affected in these cases. So
yeah,
not just the arms, not just the legs, but any one of the four.
And Mike writes, can you clarify how this is different than MS, multiple sclerosis? What should we look for? Emmanuel Vaubant, I know you work at Benioff Children's Hospital and Multiple Sclerosis Center. Do you have a sense of how this is different from MS?
Yes, so it's different from MS in many ways. The first one, I would say, the rapidity of onset of symptoms is really quite different from MS, because we're talking of onset of flaccid paralysis within hours, whereas with MS, very often when there is weakness, it's actually taking several days to reach the maximum. A lot of what we have seen also was purely weakness. There was no numbness in a lot of these cases. There was no problem with bowel and bladder. There was no problem with the vision. So this would be different from MS. And in addition, typically when we see patients who have weakness that is related to MS, we also find evidence on the MRI, either the MRI of the brain or the MRI of the spinal cord, of dissemination of the demyelination throughout the central nervous system.
What are possible treatment options? I mean, I understand that Sophia Jarvis, Keith Van Haren, has had surgery to transplant nerve cells to see if that would, you know, revive the arm. Are there any treatment options available?
Well, I would say right now there are no proven treatments for this. So even if it's detected early, it's very difficult to know the best way to treat this. I would say that the physical therapy afterward is probably helpful and can certainly be very helpful in creating adaptive solutions. The nerve grafting that some of the patients have had, hard to know whether that's been it's always hard to know if something is helpful when it's done sort of in isolation and not compared to others in a systematic way. So could that be helpful to some patients? It could be. I think the difficult thing is this is a bit different than the sorts of things we're used to seeing on a frequent basis. So it does present some new rehabilitation challenges that I'm sure our health system will be up to meeting eventually. But right now it is proving difficult to develop good rehabilitation strategies for.
Have any of the kids, the cases that you're investigating, have any of the kids gotten better?
Yes. I'll let Dr. Wobont speak to that.
Yeah, and so in terms of treatments, what we can say also is that typical treatments that we use for inflammation in the central nervous system, such as high-dose steroids, plasma exchange, or intravenous immunoglobulins, have not been associated with any substantial progress shortly or after a few months after treatment. So we think that there may be some direct injury to the nerve cells in the spinal cord or just out of the spinal cord that is actually more difficult to treatment. We have actually also seen patients doing, in addition to physical therapy and OT, we have seen patients do nerve stimulation. And we have only...
And Dr. Vuban, I'm sorry, I'll have to end it there. We were joined by Dr. Keith Van Haren, a pediatric neurologist at Lucile Packard Children's Hospital, Stanford, and Dr. Emmanuel Vuban, a neurologist at UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital. Thank you both for being part of our program. I'm Mina Kim. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.